Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune for now. Jay.
Okay.
Jay, it's your second to last Dodgers series. No, it's not, actually.
No, it's not. It's my third to last. They've got nine games left, Kevin. We've been talking about this for months.
There's so many games left against the Dodgers. By my math, that's almost a third, and it contributes greatly to the Padres having theoretically, and I say throw that all out, but whatever, theoretically the most difficult path to the playoffs among the contenders for the wild card. And as we talk now on Friday morning, the Padres are three games up on the Brewers for the final wild card spot and a half game back of the Phillies for the second wild card spot, which, you know, it's interesting. We could talk about that. What path do you want to the playoffs? I think they're eight games back of, I don't think I know, they're eight games back of the Braves, who hold the number four seed, meaning the Braves would get a home playoff game. There we go, Jay. What did I miss?
Well, they're not catching the Braves.
No, they're not catching the Braves. No.
So that's
Phillies Brewers talk right here.
That's not going to matter. The Braves could still catch the Mets. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's only a three game difference between them right now.
The season there, I believe. I think what's going on with the Mets because, you know, that's all that anyone talks about.
Unless it's the Yankees. I think the Padres, I mean, I think they have a two-game gap now in the all-important loss column over the Brewers, which is something they have not had. It's been even, or they've even been one behind, it seems like, for quite a while. You know, that's what happens when you actually sweep a team that you're supposed to sweep. Imagine that. I mean, they've won 5 out of 6 on this road trip, which I think realistically, that's what you would expect. That's the best you could hope for. You're not going to say you're going to just keep sweeping teams. But realistically, winning 5 out of 6 against the Royals and the Giants is what you would have hoped for as a Padre fan at the start of all this. And man, the Giants series was just torture to watch sometimes. And I know it was really torture.
To
be there. But, you know, every game the Padres had either a 4 or a 5 run lead, and every game came down to the last batter of the game. And it's just remarkable how they managed to do that. And perhaps even more remarkable was that they won all three games after doing that. And the most remarkable of all, Kevin, maybe we could start here, is the man who finished out Wednesday's game at Oracle Park, the one, the only, Josh Hader, with his first save as a Padre 1 month after the trade and only, 3 days after looking completely and hopelessly lost in Kansas City. So why don't you start there? How did that come to be in those 3 days? What went on to get him back on the mound 3 days later?
Well, it came to be because of what you said, where the previous 2 days they had need to virtually empty their bullpen and have Nick Martinez close. And Nick Martinez had been declared the closer, the interim closer. And it seemed like that would be the case for the time being, except this. They needed someone, if they were in that position on Wednesday, to do the honors. And well, try as he might, Bob Melvin could not get Joe Musgrove through 7 full innings. It means Adrian Morahone has to come in. Then Adrian Morahone pitches the 7th, or pitches the 8th as well, except he can't get out of it. In comes Luis Garcia. Now the bullpen's empty, unless you're bringing Nabil Chrismat or Steven Wilson in.
You couldn't do a 4-out save with Garcia?
Is that something? Well, you could, but I just was going under the assumption you didn't want to because, you know, Luis Garcia has been fantastic and Luis Garcia has not been so great. So you've got Steven Wilson, the rookie, or Nabil Chrismat. You decide you're going with Josh Hader. And here's a big part of the reason why, because you trust your pitching coach. And when I use the pronoun you, I mean Bob Melvin. Bob Melvin trusts his pitching coach. And, you know, I've been talking with Ruben a bit and talking with other people as well. And Ruben Niebla was absolutely adamant. Now, he was adamant before Sunday's game, but he arguably was more adamant earlier in the week in San Francisco that Josh Hader was right there, that these things, and I think we've talked about a little bit here on the podcast, these mechanical things that they had tried to work on since he had started to go bad, something they'd identified when they got him because he had been going bad with the Brewers. But, you know, you got to wait a little while and to be able to really like get into it with a new guy. A new guy doesn't walk in the door and you go, hey, good to meet you. Here's what we're going to change about you. Right. And so they were adamant that he was close. The evidence on Wednesday said they were right. We'll see. I think Josh Hader is the closer going forward.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What happens? I mean, it seems far-fetched to say what happens if there's a save situation this weekend because they're
playing. That's terrible of you, Jay.
I know. But let's say there is a save situation this weekend against the Dodgers. Everybody in the bullpen's rested, obviously. There was an off day yesterday. Most guys didn't pitch on Wednesday. Hader threw, I think, 14 pitches. Mm-hmm. 13 were fastballs.
Yes, they were.
How much of a concern is that he was really a one-pitch pitcher, which, okay, it worked against the Giants. Is that going to work against the Dodgers?
Right.
And I guess the bigger question is he closing this weekend? Does he get the first shot this weekend, or is it still Nick Martinez? Or might it depend on who the Dodgers have coming up in their lineup?
I absolutely believe it could depend on who the Dodgers have coming up. I don't know that it would have depended on a Wednesday, but he was facing the bottom of the order, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And so, and like you pointed out, it doesn't matter. Facing Giants, Dodgers, I mean, it's like, who's at the bottom of the Dodgers order? A little bit of a tricky thing for Bob Melvin, right? I mean, let's just say that he doesn't have ultimate faith in Josh Hader. But if you don't put him out there in the ninth, you're declaring that to Josh Hader in the world that you don't have the faith. So, but you got to try to go for the win, right? So look, I just think that Josh Hader is the closer going forward. If Bob Melvin has dropped so many times, we got him for a reason.
Yeah.
Now, if behind the scenes, they're talking with Hader, and that is one thing that certainly, if he's thinking about not using him, I'll guarantee you that he's talking to Josh Hader about it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is the situation. Here's what we're going to do. We really think this, these are the things, that we don't think are going to work in here, whatever. But Bob Melvin's strength is the communication. But I think this is a time where you go with Josh Hader.
I thought it was interesting on Wednesday, and I sent out a couple tweets about this, and it was, all in good fun, even if people don't always take it that way. And I think people did in this case, but you see Hader throwing in the bullpen. It's like, maybe he's just getting in some work. Well, I knew he wasn't getting in work. You knew he was up there, that he was throwing for a reason. But that still took quite a bit of, let's call it gumption, whatever you want to call it. For Bob Melvin in that situation, knowing how badly they needed a win, knowing how much it would have hurt to lose a game like that, to go to Hader in that situation. And it tells you something, I guess, about Melvin, tells you something about Ruben Niebla, that he believed in Hader or believed in himself, in the idea that he could get this guy turned around. And, maybe that, maybe above all else, that's bigger than any of us know in terms of what does it mean for a manager. We look at different strategic situations and all that kind of stuff, but maybe that kind of stuff is more important than anything else. And maybe it doesn't always work, because we've seen this team, we've talked for many months now about how they haven't looked all that much different than last year's team. But that was a big three games and a big six games, really, to win 5 out of 6. I don't remember them winning 5 out of 6 last year. I didn't look it up, but during that slide, I don't know that they ever won 5 out of 6.
Huge difference between this year and last. Is that,
so that
did not happen.
Maybe that's the kind of sign that we're seeing that this is different. Now, it could all turn around this weekend. They don't have great pitching matchups on paper. Yu Darvish goes tonight, which is good for the Padres. Dustin May goes for the Dodgers, which is bad for the Padres, because I've seen Dustin May against the Padres, and he's usually pretty good. Tomorrow night looks like a big mismatch on paper with Urias against Manaea, but Manaea's had his good games. I don't think any of them come against the Dodgers, though, which is not good. And then the third game, the Sunday night or Sunday after late afternoon game, I guess, on ESPN, is Clevinger and Haney, which is actually a rematch from the Saturday game a month ago, which was the one game that I went to in LA. And that was the game where I thought both guys pitched pretty well, better than the numbers showed. And that was the game where Clevinger got beat really on three sliders. Will Smith got 2 for RBIs. One was a home run. And then Max Muncy, of all people, hit a home run off him, which was the big blow in that game. So we'll see what happens. I mean, as we know, these games are certainly not won on pitching matchups or anything like that. The Dodgers certainly would be favored to win all of them, but it will be interesting to see what happens down the stretch. If the Padres, do they go Garcia in the 7th, Martinez in the 8th, Hader in the 9th? I mean, maybe that's kind of the ideal setup at this point. And, someone like Tim Hill can be thrown in there at some point. Morahone can be thrown in at some point. I mean, as you said, if Hader is right, it changes everything, because it gives you the guy at the end that you can trust, and it moves everybody else up an inning And maybe you don't have to give Joe Musgrove the long leash that I think he was giving him the other day, you know, hoping that he could work through that one more inning.
Right. And, you know, hey, speaking of Musgrove, and I wrote about it both in the newsletter beforehand and then afterward. I mean, I really think that this guy, a small part, okay, but a part of the $100 million contract is what he did with Luis Campusano. All right. Look, that was a surprise to a lot of people in the organization. The Campusano was brought up when Jorge Alfaro went on the injured list.
Right.
Alfaro, by the way, on a rehab assignment, probably back at the beginning of the week, but because they had Cam Gallagher down there waiting to come up. You got Campusano, who, look, he's not going to catch Blake Snell. If you remember last year, Mark Melancon would not throw to him. But there are people in the organization who think that he's made great strides defensively. Nonetheless, wasn't a great game on Sunday, not putting it on him at all, but there was, you know, there were some miscommunications, blah, blah. Joe Musgrove basically took Luis Campusano, you know, arm around the shoulder in the days leading up to his start and walked him through a lot of things. Campusano took that, was emboldened by that, and called a magnificent game. Now, they ran into some issues that you're going to run into with a first-time catcher. Remember, 23 starts, Austin Nola had caught Joe Musgrove for a reason.
Right.
A lot of pitches. And so I just thought that the leadership that the Bob Melvin could go to Musgrove and say, hey, you up for this? Musgrove's like, yeah, let's do it, man.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was that spoke a lot to Joe Musgrove.
No, I agree. I thought that was great that they did it. I thought it was great that you pointed it out and Musgrove talking about that and how he worked with him
and how Campusano's grown. I thought that was great.
Yeah. That really was something. And now those guys will get it. Musgrove gets an extra day before his next start, which I think should come in handy before he pitches again against Arizona when the Padres come home next week. So that was interesting. Speaking of what you wrote about, to change topics here, the story that was in today's paper and online this morning on Manny Machado. I'm always fascinated to read about Machado in general because he's just a fascinating player and just someone who's so different than anything you would have expected having heard the quote-unquote narrative about him. And if you didn't watch him play every day, and having seen him play every day now for the last few years, seem to have learned a lot about him. But what always gets me is when other players talk about guys. And yeah, he's their teammate and everything, but they're not going to talk about Will Myers that way or Jake Cronenworth that way. And nothing against those guys at all. I mean, those guys are major league players and everything. But the way, and I'm just taking this off what you write, but you can speak to it better. The way these guys talk about Machado, and they did it a little bit with Soto as well. It's like you can just tell that these guys are the best in the world at what they do. And even they know that, like, Manny is at another level.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's because he's
bleeping Manny Machado, right?
That's the point. It's like your difference between, you know, someone who's got a lot of money and Elon Musk. Okay, that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about, hey, there ain't nothing wrong with Jake Cronenworth. He looks at Manny Machado the way we look at Jake Cronenworth. Wow, look at what Jake Cronenworth does. That's pretty special.
Right.
And that's how the rest of the players look at Manny. Now, that's awesome. And then it's also like, well, okay, they can't be him. Why can't people just hit like Manny Machado? Well, because he's Manny Machado. And clearly, and that was the tenor of the story, and everybody knows about the thing he said last time that the Padres were here, he knows it. And that is kind of why he's able to be that, right? Like, oh, I had a terrible August or July. I just went 1-for-11 in this series. We stink right now. We're going to be fine. Why? Because I'm Manny Machado. So, and there's so much I didn't get into. The guy's knowledge, because it just, you know, I needed to focus it. And there's only so much space in print and all that. And there's just so much more that there's another story in there about his communication with Bob Melvin. You know, speaking of what we were talking about earlier, right? Like, how big is that? Hey, whatever you want to say. Manny did not have that with Jace Tingler or Andy Green. Okay. But Bob Melvin came in and Manny wanted it with Bob Melvin. His brother-in-law, who's very close with, had played for him, Yonder Alonso, and other players that Manny knew. And there's no one Manny respects like other players. And so he wanted to. And you see them talking every day. And they talk about things like bullpen usage and all that. And it's like Manny knows the game, right? There's so much I didn't get into about Manny can hit you the big bomb. But then there was this one time in Kansas City, and it happens all the time, I say one time, where Manny missed a pitch. And he was angry. I almost used the bad word. He was angry. But now he's down to two strikes. What's he do the next pitch? Other way for an RBI single. Like, right. Didn't let something he and Juan Soto do that the greats do that others can't so much, even the best players. That didn't ruin his at bat. He turned it into a positive at bat. I wrote about that with Soto the other night. I thought that 9-pitch walk was incredible because Soto missed 2 pitches. And it wasn't like anyone in the stadium couldn't see that Juan Soto was upset with himself. But what did he do? Fouled off another tough pitch, took 2 balls, including one that anyone in the world would have swung at, and except him. And he works a walk that starts a rally. These are 2 incredibly special players that are on the team right now.
And yet, when you watch them both, to me, one of them, and we've talked about this before too, one of them changes games more than the other one does. Now, again, we've only seen Soto for a month. We're not going to judge that, but based on when we've seen Machado for 4 years or whatever, but there is a bit of that difference in them. But that's, you know, that's to figure out more. We could talk about that more, you know, down the line. You'll talk about that next year with your new co-host. But I do think, I mean, there is a, you know, there is still something about watching great players, and obviously the Padres are missing one of them this year, but being able to watch Machado day in and day out, being able to watch Soto now day in and day out, there is something that's special about that. And we haven't had that here for quite a while, you know, other than at least until Tatis came along, but there wasn't a whole lot of that in the, and this guy always gets brought up in this situation, but his name always comes to mind. In the Carlos Asuaje, Corey Spangenberg era, you know, those poor guys, I always think of them.
They're always the ones I talk about.
Situations. I know. But so it is good. And look, the Padres right now, I think it's, 73-59? You know, they're on pace for well over 90 wins. And now it's a matter of, can they find a way to keep this thing going against the Dodgers with, you know, 3 games this weekend, 3 games next weekend, 3 games a couple weeks after that. And that's where everything is going to kind of hinge, because if they go 1-8 against the Dodgers or something like that, that's going to put an awful lot of pressure on all those other games. I mean, that's going to really limit your margin for error. They need to find a way to win, you know, try to break even, try to win 4 games, whatever it might be. But they can't continue to get run over by the Dodgers now when time is really running out on the season.
3-6, win one series, something like that. Not get swept here this weekend. Still have a winning trip.
Yeah.
I hate to have a loser mentality, but like I consider it a success if they win 1 of 3. This a success. I'm putting air quotes for those listening later. If they win 1 of 3 here this weekend and finish this trip 6-3, hey. Fine, whatever, right? And then, heck, next weekend after the Diamondbacks, you get a day off, and then you play the Dodgers again next weekend at home, right?
Yeah.
That'll be a great atmosphere, and maybe win that series, okay? You got one more midweek series. I think it's the third to the last now. It's the third to last series because you attacked that Giants on at the end. You're right. Go 4-9. Heck, go 3-6. Whatever. You say they're on pace for over 90, except, right?
Yeah.
They got to play the Dodgers 9 times. So
exactly.
Look, I still say it's a good enough team to compete with the Dodgers, but they haven't showed it this year. And I know that is just contradicting myself, whatever. I still say that they are good enough. And the Dodgers if this was the Padres, we'd be saying, oh man, absolutely is Tony Gonsolin's out for the year, because, you know, it went from, well, we think this is minor to, the MRI didn't go great. He's going to see a doctor. So
we would know what the next announcement would would be. But I don't think the Padres are not at the Dodgers level on a long-term basis, but you don't have to do that. You need to be on their level on a short-term basis. And for a weekend here and a weekend there, they should be better than what they've shown. Certainly should be better than what they showed last month up in LA. So, and really most of this year. So we'll see if anything has changed, you know, so far. It will be hot. The ball will be carrying at Dodger Stadium, and you know, the Padres that not necessarily good when Manaea is pitching, but we'll see. The Dodgers are certainly going through a stretch now where they have lost guys. you know, like you mentioned, Gonsolin. Kershaw came back yesterday and pitched great. The Padres won't see him. Probably won't even see him next week. I haven't looked at the Dodgers' schedule, but if he pitched Thursday, that figures that he would then pitch in the middle of the week. Padres might not see him next week either. You know, Walker Buehler's obviously gone. Dustin May's back. The bullpen, Blake Treinen is supposed to be back tonight, although his velocity was down, I read, in his last rehab start. Dave Roberts said, well, we're hoping that the adrenaline will, you know, being back in the big leagues will carry him. But that's got to be a little bit of a concern. Gratterall is hurt again, so he won't be pitching this weekend. We know they lost Buehler. So, yeah, it'll be it's always fun. The games won't be short, I'm sure, and you can prepare for a couple of long nights there.
That's how it is when you when these two face for the last 2 years in particular, for sure. But
right.
I think that's it, Jay. I think
what else do we miss? That's about all. I think that the Padres, I believe, called up Matt Beatty and Reese Kinnear. Those are the two extra guys for the September call-ups. Obviously, Alfaro, when he comes back, somebody will have to go. I don't know if that would be Camposano or if they would keep him around and be one of the other guys. We'll see what happens there. Any other housekeeping type things?
Pierce Johnson has been pitching very well. I would imagine that is imminent for him to come back. He pitched last night, I believe. So not today necessarily, but he has gone, I believe, checked almost all the boxes unless they want him to go back to back. So that's big. Drew Pomeranz, haven't found out, but we'll find out maybe a little bit more today whether he has a chance to be back this year. So Craig Stammen still has a little bit more work to do down there, probably get transferred over to AAA to get some more work in. But, it's interesting, the bullpen somewhat shaping up. I know it got a little rough these last couple of days, but it's been a very good month for the bullpen. Or I should say August was a very good month for five or six relievers down there. Yeah, I think that's about it, Jay. And, so next week, Monday, all of you except me will be working. When I say all of you, I mean Jay. And, well, Jay, you'll still be working because I'll make you. We'll just skip the podcast against the Diamondbacks because they play the Diamondbacks enough. You don't need to hear about that. But we'll do a podcast next Thursday in advance of the big Dodgers series at Petco Park.
Right. That sounds like a good plan. And if something huge happens over the weekend, we'll try to pop in on Tuesday. But for now, let's plan on next Thursday. So we hope everyone has a long and safe holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, everybody.